And the Wednesday sessions are going to be covered by people who are more versed with application development. So if you're interested in like mobile development and stuff like that, that's the kind of projects you can expect to like benefit the most from like out of the curriculum on the Wednesday sessions. But in theory, you should be able to do both in both sessions, but that's what makes the most sense. So I recommend you show up tomorrow and on Friday, and so we can like make a plan, like figure out what you guys want to do, and even if it's just going to be like sessions where we can help you with assignments and tasks, it's still a room for you that's reserved for you guys to work. So, and we're going to be there, so it's nice to show up even if you don't like follow the what we're planning out to do. Any questions? How many think they will show up tomorrow? Nice, okay. So you'll meet the other guys as well tomorrow, and yeah, see you guys there.
So now you know that we don't have another class tomorrow, it's just about this Spark Father, and also it might not have been correctly recorded, so if you can just share this with the others that are missing today. So okay, let's move on and let's start with the lecture for the day. We'll talk about risk management. This is one of the most important topics about information security and cybersecurity, so this is also part of this course. And a bit about contents before. So we'll start with a little introduction, some cases. Then we go on and give an overview of risk management processes. And then we go into more details by talking about risk identification, risk assessment, and risk control. We will close this presentation with something that mentions the differences between quantitative and qualitative risk management. So let's start with a case. This was actually taken from the Data Secret Helpful Lederer book. There was this event in spring 2017. It was related to the Danish company Marsh. And it seemed that they have suffered a loss of $200 million because of the impact from NotPetya ransomware. I also mentioned before WannaCry attack and so on. So this year and this time was a bit difficult for different companies worldwide. And in this case, it was a Danish company, Marsh. The story tells us that Maersk actually, it seems that they had this software house from Ukraine, which was contracted for providing a certain service. And it may also be possible that since they are a big company and they have this international activity going on, they might have also done a proper risk assessment process, as we will also explain further on, and then decided that yes, okay, we will have this Ukrainian company delivering us services and so on. But then at that time, there was another thing going on, which was the Crimea annexation. So there was this thing about the Russian government, the Russian army trying to get hold of one part of Ukraine, and as a result there were many different hidden activities, under the surface activities that were going on through the whole time, directly targeted to the Ukrainian agencies and different institutions. And actually, It seems that one of that was also the company that was providing the software services to Maersk, which was infected. And so whenever they had to deliver updates to improve whatever they were doing for Maersk, they were also sending the virus further. And so with this, we can understand that having a risk management process is really necessary. And this is one of the cases that shows that it might be done properly in an initial moment, but then we should also consider it as a process. So it's not a finite event. It should be a continuous event that should be reassessed and monitored through the whole time. And then there might be other cases. For example, let's assume that you're part of a company, and of course today most of the companies have their online presence, either with a website or maybe with a social media account, which is even more popular. And especially on the social media account, then there are different issues that can be raised. For example, the company and the staff are responsible for whatever is going public there in the social media account. So whatever information is shared and whatever information is provided to the others that can see this information. And then you should also be aware that this information and this account should not be taken over from unauthorized users. And in any event, this should always be part of a risk management process, because in that case, that would be one of the ways how to find a probable solution if there is a certain event going on. And then there's always the thing about your personal email. I think we mentioned before, but I can also bring it again here. Emails are more and more used as evidence. So they are being used as a proof of a certain activity, of a certain communication, of things that are transferred and so on. And in this case, especially if they're part of an organization, if they're part of an internal network within the organization, then they are even more relevant and also, let's say, vulnerable. So emails can be a usual asset to the organization, and therefore they need to be protected from all these external users that are not related to the company, but they are just trying to get some information and then use it for their own benefit. And we could actually try and think about this from a risk management perspective. And for example, if we need to find a way how to make these emails as least accessible from the outside users as possible, then we might, for example, use this encryption techniques in order to maintain their integrity or their confidentiality. And then further on, as in the Marsh case, as in the WannaCry case, as in the other cases like in the Norsk Hydro case, etc., we've all seen that there are different types of ransomware going out there, and then it's probably very highly likely that a company, any type of company, can be affected from this. And so how do we make sure that we are not affected from that? Well, we should try to find solutions that enable us to reduce the risk from being affected or from being attacked from these types of attacks. And it could be just by updating your systems or performing backups and so on. Now let's move on to the overview. So as mentioned before, there is this book from Sun Tzu, which is always part of the different books regarding information security, cybersecurity, but also risk management, because risk management is very highly related to these topics as well. And then you can see that there is this paragraph from this book that I quoted here, which says that if you know the enemy and you know yourself, then you should not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know just yourself but not your enemy, for every victory that you have, you will also have a defeat. And then if you know neither the enemy and nor yourself, then you will probably succumb to every battle. So it's like telling us that in order to be victorious or to be on the winning side of all these, let's say now in this case, virtual or cyber battles, you need to know very well yourself and your enemies. So it's like you need to understand whatever assets you are trying to protect and whoever you are trying to protect them from. And so this is done through a risk management process. And in the risk management process, there are three major pillars or three major phases. First of all, we need to identify all the risks that are related to the organization. And this means that we should identify all the risks that are related to each of the information assets, since we're talking about information security, cybersecurity. And then we should also define how to assess these risks and how to correctly understand what is the value behind each of these potential threats and risks to the organization. And then once we can assess them, once we understand what's the value behind, then we can try to control them. And by controlling, we will try to maybe to reduce the risk, we will try to transfer it, and so on. There are different strategies that might be involved in this final step. And then we should also think about a process. So everything does not end with the risk control. It just goes back, and then we go further on with the identifying new risks, improving the knowledge that we have so far, and then again assessing and so on. So it's all like a circle. This is all defined in a more visual way in this slide. So you can see here all the different activities that are part of each of these main stages. And we will go through most of them in this lecture today. Before going through all of them, let's just also talk about two very important terms. First of all, risk appetite. So you might have heard of this notion. If not that, then we'll talk about this today. So the risk appetite is nothing less than the total quantity associated with the type of risk accepted, which is related to the trade-off between the level of security and the level of accessibility that we might have towards the information assets. Sometimes it's also considered or known as risk tolerance. So what is the level of risk tolerance that an organization has? What is the level of risk appetite that the organization might accept as part of their everyday tasks? It might be that some organizations have a very low risk tolerance. These are like typically military organizations, healthcare organizations, financial institutions, all of these sectors that are really, really trying to maintain as much as possible low risk activities. And also, especially in the last years, whenever we talk about healthcare institution or military organization or whatever, in this low risk tolerance environment, we should also include more and more their partners, because it seems that, for example, in the Marsh case, it was this software provider from Ukraine. In the Hydro case, it was this branch of offices somewhere in Europe, and so on. So we need as much as possible to hold on to our partners and make them understand that they also need to go through the same processes, they also need to follow the same rules as the main company does. So they also should be partners involved in this low risk tolerance as related to the main institution. And then on the other side, there might be also other organizations which do not have this low level of risk tolerance, and it also is justified. For example, there might be different startups that don't require this higher, that don't have this high awareness regarding risks. They just want to make sure they can get more profits and then try to stabilize themselves further on in the future. And there might also be other types of organizations which are on the other side of the risk tolerance. And then everything you need to know is that you should try to define the risk appetite not just based on, let's say, how you wish that your organization does in the long-term or short-term future, but mostly on experience and the facts. So it should be based on history, it should be based on data, it's not just based on some assumptions and so on. That's the thing about risk appetite. And then it's also important to know that you should never spend more money to protect an asset than its worthiness. So this is also important. So you don't need to allocate more funds to something than whatever the value of that activity or that asset is about. And another term to discuss about is talking about the residual risk. So what is the residual risk? It is the remaining amount of risk that is left over once we have conducted all the risk management process activities. And if you see that image there, first of all, we reduce from the total level of risk, we reduce the effect of all those threats that now will not be threatening our organization because we have some measures for that. Then we will also reduce all the effect from the vulnerabilities that will not be probable once we also have these measures applied. And in the end, we will also reduce the amount of the asset value that is being removed because of these measures, right? Because you also can affect how your asset is being exposed, how your asset is being used, how much valuable it can be if you remove some part of it which might be vulnerable. And then from all this, part here, we go until this side. And this is also an interesting part because it shows that there might be some vulnerabilities which can be transformed into a threat, that are also reduced because of these measures taken. And then, if we want to distinguish between residual risk and risk tolerance, we can say that, first of all, it is okay to have a bit of risk. So there should be no organization there seeking to have zero risk, so no risk at all. This should not be the case. As I mentioned before, you should not spend more money than the worth of the asset itself. And on the other case, you always need a bit of risk, because then it's not only that you need it, but it's also that you maybe you cannot predict it accurately. So there will be some amount of risk which is like not predicted or something like that. And then this is also the main goal of information security teams, of cybersecurity teams, that they should not seek to have a zero level of risk, but it should be as minimal as possible, as related also to the risk appetite that the organization has. So once we are able to reduce, to have the residual risk lower or at maximum equal with the risk appetite that the organization has, then we're okay. Then this is the ultimate goal, and this is the objective that the teams have for this organization. And then if there is anything new, any new challenge, any new risks, then the process starts all over again, and then we start by identifying it, assessing it, and so on. So let's start with three stages. First of all, risk identification. In this stage, we are talking about information security professionals and how they should be aware of their own assets. And this is just from the beginning. First of all, since this is an important stage, like all the other stages, the team that is related, that is involved with this process, should be careful enough to plan and organize the whole process as properly as possible. And then once everything is planned and organized, and then the work starts, then they start by identifying, inventorying, and also categorizing all the assets. Further on, they will try to prioritize them, because once again, you cannot protect everything. You cannot try to invest in all of your assets regarding security, but you have to prioritize somehow, because it's true that not all of the assets will be targeted, and then it's also true that not all of them are like vulnerable. And then after you prioritize the assets, you start by identifying the threats, prioritizing the threats, and then you go on with the vulnerability. So as part of this stage, first of all, you start by identifying your assets, your information assets, and let's say you have an information system, and as part of the information systems, there are six different types of components known, and we talk about people, which in this case might be categorized as employees, so internal users, or non-employees, external users, or someone who is not part of the organization. And then procedures, which are like, again, procedures in the information asset, let's say dictionary. The data that's related to information, software, and then regarding hardware, we have system devices and the network components. And then when we think about how to prioritize them, one of the best ways that is used in this case is the so-called weighted factor analysis, where you rank all of these assets and you give them different points and scores related to how vulnerable they are, how what is their level of impact to the final revenues, profitability, public image, as this is very important to information security and also to the organization activities. And then you have this final score. For example, if you have these different assets, like you have some documents that show information about a customer order. And then you can say that if this information is taken, that's 100% impact to the revenues, 100% impact to the profitability, and 100% impact to the public image. So the total score would be 100. And then if you have another document, which is like showing, or which is related to a customer service request via email, it seems that it's not so relevant to the total profitability or revenues and so on, and so the total score would be like 55. So if we would like to prioritize between these two assets, we would invest more, or at least invest only in the first one, because that's the most relevant one, and that's also, that will be probably affecting more the organizational income and so on. And then once we prioritize the assets, then we can go on and start by identifying and prioritizing threats. And then when we identify and prioritize the threats, there are several questions that might be asked in this case. For example, which would be the threats that might be dangerous to any kind of asset that we have in the given environment, in the context, right? And this is very important because, for example, as I mentioned, I think, a few weeks ago, you might be located in a place where there are no earthquakes. There have been no earthquakes since a couple of centuries or whatever. So that might not be a threat you should face. Or you might be located somewhere where there will be no flood or something like that. But that's also another threat that you can maybe skip. So these are some questions that help you identify the probable threats and then also prioritize them. And so another question would be, which ones of the threats that are located so far would represent the higher danger to the organization's information? And in this moment, then you start answering these questions by employing either quantitative or qualitative measures, which is like, if you have data, then it's like quantitative, if you have facts and stories. But then if you just have some ways to rank them, this is more like qualitative. And we will get back to that in the end. And then how much would it cost to recover from a successful attack? Because it's not only what kinds of threats are there, but also if this threat becomes real, if it turns into an attack, what would be the cost from that attack? Would it be more relevant to recover from this kind of attack or from that other kind of attack? And so, overall, which ones of these threats would require the greatest expenditure in order to be prevented? And then, these are just like typical questions, but then depending on the context, depending on the location, on the time given, on the different assets that might be owned by the organization, we might have even more questions, industry-specific questions, as well as others. Then we go through the next stage, which is the risk assessment. The risk assessment stage. In the risk assessment stage, we will be able now to understand what are the main vulnerabilities, the main threats, and also the main assets that we need to protect. And from that point, we will start first by planning and organizing, again, this part of the process, because it's also very relevant to understand how we can assess the risks that we are facing. And then once we can do that, we will usually end up by assigning a score or a risk rating to each of the information assets that we have. And first of all, we will start by determining the loss frequency, which is like the likelihood of the attack. Then we will start evaluating the impact from an attack, which is like what is the amount of money, or what is the value of the asset that is being affected from this attack, and so on. So in order to do this, as mentioned before, we should be able to plan this process, or at least this part of the process, and then in order to do that, we should be able to create a method for evaluating the relative risk of each of the vulnerabilities that have been listed from the previous stage. And how will we assess this relative risk, this part of risk for each vulnerability? There is this formula, which is usually used in this case, and it shows that risk is usually measured as the probability of a successful attack, which is like the loss frequency that we talked before, multiplied by the expected loss, which is like the amount of money, because everything is translated into cost, into money, which can be affected from this attack. And then these are multiplied, and then there's also the uncertainty, which I also mentioned before. So it's like that part of the risk that is not correctly measured, or there might be some differences noticed between what we calculate and what might be the real case, and that's like the error margin, the uncertainty. And this is added so that we can have this full picture of the risk relevant to each of the vulnerabilities and threats and so on. So we will be talking more about loss frequency and loss magnitude in this lecture, starting from the next slide. So again, loss frequency as a term is nothing less than the assessment of the likelihood of an attack combined with the expected probability of success once it targets your organization. Or than the attack success probability. It's usually measured or known in other terms. In literature, you can find it as annualized rate of occurrence, or ARO. So this is the meaning behind it. Now, when we talk about attack success probability, so there are these data, or there is this knowledge base about certain types of attacks. Usually this is related to the industry, this might be also related to the company, and so on. And for example, this is like saying how many attacks are there usually in this category, in this industry or in this company. And then you come up with an amount. For example, you might have a successful attack each 4 years, and that would be for the given year, for the given period of time when we are trying to think about this stuff. That would be like 0.25, right? If it's like one attack per year, it's one. If it's four attacks per year, it's four, and so on. But usually, yeah, there are different rates. And then when we talk about the likelihood, this is like, what is the probability that a specific vulnerability will be the target of the attack? And usually this is, again, lower or at maximum one. For example, if we have a phishing email, then the likelihood for that would be like almost one, and so on. Then on the loss magnitude, which is like the second important component of the risk formula, the loss magnitude is the amount, again, of the value of the asset as related to the total part that might be lost from a single attack. And then you might also find this in the literature mentioned as single loss expectancy. So whenever we talk about risk, we combine single loss expectancy with the annualized rate of occurrence, and then we get the annualized loss expectancy. We will go back on that. So now we have to define the asset value, and we have to define what is the correct percentage of it that might be affected from the attack. But this is not easy. This is difficult, and there are many challenges both sides. So it might be very difficult to be able to evaluate properly the value of the asset that we are looking for. Especially if there are organizations that are doing this for the first time, right? Or if it's a new information asset that we don't have any historical background or anything that might help us. But then, if this is a usual process done carefully year by year or a period after another period and so on, then it's also easier for us to evaluate the correct or at least almost the proper value of an information asset. And then we can move on and define the other parts of this process. Then when it comes to what is the percentage of the asset that might be affected from this specific attack, this is also very difficult. Because how would you evaluate it? How would you say that it's like 55% or 65% or whatever? Then this might also be distinguished between different scenarios. And then it also might be the case where, for example, the organization, again, has no experience at all, which is like, they are like newly found, so they don't have any previous risk assessment procedures. This information asset is new. The threats and attacks that we are now considering are also somehow new to us, so it's very difficult. But then on the other side, again, with more information, especially from similar organizations locally or internationally, and then with more data coming from different similar attacks, then we might be able to go through this process and go to the next step. So it's always the case about data, it's always the case about information, it's always the case that without proper information we cannot properly evaluate this part of the process. And then it might be, for example, that in the event of missing information or having not correct information, we might have to turn out to other options. For example, we might try to see how we can model the whole risk process and how we can evaluate the different risk activities and the different threats and assets by just using these modeling and simulation techniques. Then, as an example, so we talked about the risk formula. So we mentioned how is the loss magnitude calculated, also the loss frequency. And so we might also give some examples and make it even more easy for you to understand this. So let's have two examples. First of all, we have an asset A, which is the example of the of an online e-commerce, electronic commerce database. Electronic commerce is like everything that is related to buying services online or product online. And then the database is the full base of different types of data that are part of an organization. I mean, if this information is new to you. So let's say that for this specific information asset, because it's like a base of information, base of data, there is an estimate of a single attack every 10 years happening, right? This is like something that's from the industry. And then, according to the company, to the staff, to the IT staff, it might be that if there is this attack every 10 years, this attack will be 50% of the time successful to the organization. Moving on, what is the value of the asset? We don't have a value like in terms of money. We have a value in terms of those rankings that we did before. It's like, which one is the most relevant, this one or that one? And in that case, on a scale from 1 to 100, the value, the asset in, that we are talking about is valued at 50. So it's like in the middle. And then when we talk about the percentage of the asset that might be affected from the attack, expectations show that whenever this asset might be attacked, all of it will be lost, because it's located somewhere that if it's attacked, there's no way to recover from it, there's no backup or whatever. And then if we ask the IT staff there, the security guys, etc., they will say that everything that we talk about, it should be like taken with a 90% accuracy rate. There should be like a 10% error margin, right? So we are not 100% sure about it, but it should be like 90%. Then okay, then we know something about this. And then asset B. Asset B is another case. Let's say that in this case we have an internal personnel database, which also is like associated to a firewall. So it seems we have a higher level of security here. And again, a database, so it's a very important information asset. Now in this case, we have a 1% chance of an attack, right? So not one attack in every 10 years, but something even less. And then we also have a 10% chance of attack success, which is if this outsider is targeting our internal database, it will have a 10% chance of success, of getting into the system, getting the information, and so on. And then, in the rating that we did before in order to prioritize the assets, I mean this organization, it seems that the value of the asset is rated like 25 out of a scale from 1 to 100. Further on, since this database is located into two different locations, if one of the locations is targeted, then it seems that 50% of the total asset will be affected. So in this case, we have a lower percentage for this
passing.
And in the end, if we asked the IT organization, how accurate would you think that this information is? And they would say again, it should be like 90%. So we think that there is this 10% error margin that should be added there. Then okay, then we know what we have to define and what we have to calculate about. So then we see. For asset A, we have one attack every 10 years. We have 50% of success chance. Then we had an asset value of 50. The percentage would be 100% once the asset is attacked, and a 10% error margin. If you do the calculations, you will get to this value. So this is the relative risk related to asset A, right? So we have all the information, so we can do that, and then we just calculate it. 2.75. And then we have asset B, the internal personal database with the firewall. Oh, I'm going a bit over here. Sorry. We might have a long break. So in asset B case, we had 1% attack chance. So it's like 0.01 multiplied by 10%, which was the attack success chance. Then we have the asset value rated at 25. And sorry, this is a mistake here, not 100%, but 50%. Here. It should be 50%, I will correct it when I send you the final version. And there's also the risk error margin, which is like 10% added to the whole value. Now, of course, these ones here are very much lower than these ones here, so even the multiplication of them would generate this value, which is very much lower than the first one. And then if we compare between them, we can understand that the relative risk related to asset A is higher than the relative risk related to asset B. So we should try to invest more into asset A, right? Or if we have to define which one should we invest on, of course, asset A. So this is why we do this in terms of the organization. And then, yeah, we can have a break now. Sorry for that. And yeah, we'll come back in 10 or 15 minutes. Yeah. So shall we start? Yeah. So then we talked about this. We had two cases in order to understand how to better calculate risk. And then, as mentioned before, we also have some other option. We might also use a simulation tool. And as mentioned in one of the previous lectures, it might be a case of understanding how to calculate risk and how to act in terms of different activities and different cases. So this is a snapshot of one of the versions of the simulation tool that I have been working on last year. And as mentioned before, in one of these next few weeks, not today actually, we might be able to use at least one of these versions to as part of the lab. And you might be able to try it and see how it works. And then maybe, hopefully, you might be able to learn something out of it. And it was initially planned to be included in the lab today. But then, because this is some part of research, I, together with some of my other colleagues, will try to make it as good as possible for this research and then make it available to you. So yeah. Then we go on to the next stage, which is risk control. So at this moment, the organization, the staff, the team that is responsible for the risk management process is already able to identify the most important assets, the most dangerous threats, and prioritize them, and then also assess the risks related to each of these assets as and threats and vulnerabilities. So in this stage, once we understand what is the level of risk for different activities or what is the total level of risk for the organization, we can then employ one of the risk control strategies. There are five different risk control strategies, which is like trying to define how the organization should respond to the risk level that it's predicted, that they expect to have. So first of all, we might use the so-called risk defense strategy, which is like trying to put more controls and safeguards and then so trying to eliminate any uncontrolled risk that is related to one of the other strategies. Then we have the risk transfer. It's like if the organization thinks that there are some activities which are highly risky and then on the other hand, they also might be risky because the organization is not competent enough to deal with those. For example, Maersk, the giant, the Danish company, the case that we had. They thought they were not able to deal with, you know, software services and so on, so they just contracted other companies to do those stuff. And then in this case, you try to control the risk related to this part of the activities by just transferring it to another company, right? Outsourcing this activity, outsourcing this part of the whole business processes. And by doing that, you just shift this part of the risk to another organization, to your partners, to your suppliers, whatever. And that's how you can reduce a part of the risk that you have already evaluated from the first and the second stage. And then you have another strategy, which is called risk mitigation. And that's like trying to reduce the impact of the loss. So if you know that you will have this attack and it will have a certain impact, how can you reduce the attack? How can you reduce the impact? You have to do something about it, and this is also included in the so-called contingency planning. So how can you recover from an attack? How can you make sure that you have minor losses and so on? There are, for example, steel companies having to pay more money because of some attack occurring 5 or 6 or more years ago. So even if the company has had an attack several years ago, they still have to pay the costs related to that. And then how can we reduce that? By employing risk mitigation. If the level of risk is such that it might be accepted, so it's like it's not bad to have it, to have this activity, to have these assets being attacked or threatened or anyway, then we might just accept the risk. And this is always the case when you have that the risk is at the level of the risk tolerance that the organization has. So if the organization tolerates risk, let's say up to 40% or whatever, then if this is the case, then we can accept it. And then we can just move on and then just see if there are any other threats or vulnerabilities that need to be identified and so on. But at this step, we just accept it. And then the final one would be to terminate it. So it's like if we see that an asset or a certain process is associated with a high level of risk and there is no other way how to reduce it, to mitigate it, to transfer it, or to and we cannot accept it because it's very high, then we might as well just try to eliminate it or terminate this service. I mean, if we have an asset, we can sell it, we can get rid of it, we can do something that it allows us to not have any risk related to that because we just don't have that asset anymore. So that's about risk termination. If we have an old system or an old device, we just get rid of them and then that's it. We don't have that kind of risk anymore. So in the risk control process, there are also, let's say, some more questions that need to be answered. It's like this, different cases, different options, and then you go through the whole process. So first of all, you identify the threats, then if the system can be exploited from the existing threats or vulnerabilities, then you go on and say if the system is vulnerable, and then so on. And then you go on and ask yourself, the team, the other employees, is the attacker gaining more than having more costs because of this? And that's, and if that's not the case, then you may accept the risk. Then if the attacker is gaining more, so you have something to lose. If the expected loss is more than what's acceptable from the organization, then you have to do something. If not, then you can just accept it. And so if the risk is unacceptable in the end, then you have either you should either mitigate it, transfer it if possible, or just terminate it by just getting rid of the device or the information asset and so on. So yeah. And then we go on and talk more about the differences between the quantitative and the qualitative risk management or risk assessment. They are like similar. So when we talk about quantitative assessment, we talk about an approach, a method that it's trying to evaluate an asset by having absolute measures. So it's like, we know that the asset value is this amount of money. We know that there will be some costs because of this potential vulnerability, this threat, and so on. And so everything is measured by real figures, by real money. And that's like talking about quantitative measures. And then if we talk about qualitative assessment, then we should understand that there is another method, which is also the most popular one, because again, we don't have enough information in this particular field, we don't have enough data, all we can count on is like insurance data, but even that is not related specifically to cyber activities, but it's more general, so we cannot even count 100% of those data, and so on. So in this case, in the qualitative assessment, this is a method that uses, let's say, categorical values. So it's like, is this asset important to your organization? Score it by putting a value between 1 and 5. And then you score it with 5 and so on. Or is this threat very related to your assets? Then you score this. But you don't have the exact value, the exact cost, or anything else. You just have some relative values that might be used in order to understand which ones of the assets is more vulnerable, which ones of the risks is more dangerous for the company and more probably more costly, and then you can decide. You can have a decision-making process after that. So, for example, a quantitative approach would be if we would like to understand what would be the value of the annualized rate of a currency, which was related to loss frequency, then we might assign a value which shows how many attacks in a 10-year period will be there related to this. And then on the qualitative aspect, we don't have to do this, but we might also have to use some similar information. We might just list all the possible attacks and rate them by the probability of occurrence, just like that. So we don't have to estimate accurately all the costs that are related. Then as a summary, first of all, we should start by evaluating the assets. So as part of an organization, we should start by defining what are the main information assets, how are they affected from different events, and so on. Then we should also identify the threats, which are the most dangerous threats, further on. We should then identify the vulnerabilities that are related to the threats, that then are related to the specific assets, and we should try to have this so-called risk profiling, which is like trying to assess all the types of risks that are related to assets and then trying to do some comparison and so on, scoring, and in the end we should just try to control it or treat it or find the proper treatment for the type of risk that we have. It might be accepted, it might be reduced, it might be terminated, and so on. So, further on, risk management is able to examine and document the security that is being used in an organization. And then, as we mentioned in the beginning, the main goal of the information security or the cybersecurity team of the risk management team within an organization should be not to have a zero level of risk, but again, to make sure that the level of the residual risk is maximum, or at least not surpassing the level of risk tolerance or risk appetite. So that should be really crucial for this process. Yeah, so on this lecture, I used materials from both Dada Secret Helpful Lettere and also from Principles of Information Security, both chapters 5. If you can, you might want to read them. If not, it's okay. This is the main material that you will have for this lecture, so that's fine. And then on the simulation tool that was shown a bit here, I told you that we will have a lab in one of the next few weeks, and then you will also have more materials available, probably my papers about that, and then some more materials, and everything will be just done in the proper time. So yeah. Then this is somehow the end for this presentation, and then for the labs, there will be two labs, two assignments, which will be somehow related to the topics that were covered previously. So we have already talked about threats and different tools that we might use. And these are, at least the first one, the cybersecurity professionals, is a lab material about different ways how can the companies protect you from these different types of attacks. And then also we will have another lab on the passwords. We talked about passwords, we gave some principles, so it will be around that. This will be the main part of the labs. And then since we talked today about risk management, then I think this is a very important part for in order to understand more about cybersecurity, we might also use the time given to have some more exercises and make you understand more about this part in this course. Then, again, related to this, there will be a guest lecture tomorrow given to another program, another group of students in Trondheim. It will be about risk management. There will be this guy from Telenor Capture. He will be talking there. And I think there will be no option of streaming it, but we will try to record the lecture. I mean, my colleagues there. And then as soon as it's available, I will, of course, share it with you on Blackboard, or maybe send you a link or something, and then you can also hear that presentation. It will be in Norwegian, and it will be held tomorrow. And I think since we're talking about risk management, then that's a good additional material for this part of the course. We'll see how it works. I hope that we can be able to get the most of it anyway. And then, next week, the plan is that we should have another guest lecture, but that will be related to the human aspects. It's the one of the topics that we have in the program, and it's also given is related to more specifically identity management and privacy issues. There will be one professor from the IIK, another one of my colleagues, and he will be having, actually the lecture will be held on Tuesday, and I will provide more information on Blackboard. So in our case, we will not have him present here, and that's also for another reason that I will be sharing with you in a few moments. But so there will, the lecture will be held on Tuesday morning in my other course in cybersecurity and teamwork. But then since it's the same topic, and I think probably the same things should be discussed between you and them, in at least in cybersecurity, you might be able to attend it, or you might just be able to watch the streaming of it or the recording of it whenever you need. And that should be at least the most part of what we are discussing on the human aspects for this semester. I will share more information with you on that. Is there any further questions? So from now on, it will be mostly about guest lectures, recordings, and stuff that are, of course, related to the main topics that are part of this course, this part. And that's about the lectures. And then on the labs, we will try to discuss more about the lectures and have more lab assignments. And yeah. So Bian is also a professor, and he is also coordinating this event. This event is Siket Nok. I think you also have read about it. You might have received some announcement. I'm not sure. It's the annual event that is always held here in Jevek, and it's held in Eibigen, in Atrium. Now, the time is the same with the course that we have. It's 1 week from today, and then we'll see. I will, of course, inform you about the more details about the plan for next week. And it might be that we'll skip the lecture, but we might be back here for the labs. So that might be the part of this. And then there's also the link there. You can find more information there. This year will be about, as you can see there, the healthcare sector. So it might be interesting for some of you to attend it and to hear the presentation there. Yeah, so this is somehow the lecture for today. We might have a break now and then go on with the labs, as I told you in the slides. Okay?